and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ailey Packham, and we are in your ears thanks to Flowers Unlimited. Well, it's been a great week here on Planet Albion as we've got back to winning ways. First came a confidence-boosting win in the FA Cup at Carrow Road, which saw us through to the next round and rejoice at the sight of a Solly March goal. However, the groans were probably audible from the moon as we were drawn at home to Chelsea in the next round. The tie will now take place on Saturday the 8th with kickoff at 8 p.m. On Thursday, we recorded our fourth win on the road this season as goals from Kerry Matoma and Jorginho were enough to see us get past Ipswich. And then on Sunday, we're back on the road as we head to Old Trafford to face an inconsistent Man United side as we try and add a fifth away win of the season and our first double. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back journalist, author, museum and all-round good egg, Nick Shapanik. And alongside Nick, we're also delighted to welcome back the one and only Vicky Rees. Hello, everybody. How are we all?
Hello.
I've never been described as a museum before.
Yeah, I thought you said museum.
I said musician, Nicholas.
All right, sorry. You said museum.
Well,
probably right the first time.
Are you suggesting museum you're piece. A relic, Nick?
Yeah, museum piece. Yes.
Relics was Pink sure, Floyd. I'm sure
as time goes on, some of your books will be in many museums.
Yeah. Charming. No, Relics was Pink Floyd, and I thought you're more of a Bowie man myself.
It is very much so, to the point where he plays in the Bowie band. Well, you did play in the Bowie band.
I think it's no now longer. Ziggy broke up the band.
Oh,
again.
Terrible state of affairs. Okay, well, welcome back, guys. It's been a good week. Finally, getting that long run without a win out of the way, and obviously into the next round of the FA Cup as well. So, I mean, let's start with Norwich, and well, Vicky, it was very much a case of Fabian respecting the competition, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. We were all sort of pleasantly surprised with the team that was put out. It was, you know, it's not an easy tie, is it? When you get drawn away to a decent championship side, it's a potential, or let's do it, it's a potential banana skin, as Fabian Hertzler himself puts it. So, yeah, it was this sort of tie you could easily trip up on if you didn't take it seriously. I think the team was a decent side to put out. And after the first sort of 20 minutes or so, it all kind of, you know, went uphill from there, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Nick, I mean, it was a slow start, which is kind of like our trademark at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, most of the Albion players were happy just to watch Julio Enciso taking a few of his usual shots. I think that when they hit the post, it sort of stung us into action. It was actually, I think it was 9 of the 10 outfield players who'd finished the game against Arsenal. So I think he wanted to do the job and then possibly give some other people some minutes, as happened. And but once we you know, started really getting into them, I don't think there was much doubt of what the result was going to be.
I mean, I think
the whole thing about having a strong side, as you put it, AD, which is, you know, fair enough, is it's in comparison to what's gone before, especially last season, where probably this time last year, it was all we could do to get out a decent 11, and then the rest of the bench not being sort of peppered with under 21s and kids sort of who are going to be sort of, you know, being put up against it. So, you know, we're now in a position, even with the injuries that we've got, that it's not necessarily the best 11 that we could ever put out, but it's a decent 11.
Well, no, Al, but I mean,
like as you put it in the first half, they could click properly.
Well, I mean, let's face it. I mean, the team we actually put out on we started with was pretty much the only players we had fit, really.
Saw the bench, it wasn't horrific, was it?
It wasn't horrific, but I mean, obviously, there's players coming back from injury. Obviously, Solly March, Danny Welbeck was there. But, you know,
is it my imagination? Because, you know, again, we were talking about this, and I know this is a little bit of a bugbear of yours at the moment, AD, is it's sort of like these new doctors that we've got in, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. I don't know if it's my imagination or not, but are the players coming back quicker this season than they were last season? I mean, of course, you can't necessarily compare like with like, because one injury might have been more severe than another. But do the players seem to be coming back quicker? Or is it just my imagination?
I think it's
I
your
actually thought they were
imagination.
coming back less quickly, and I even
Oh.
made an inquiry to the club about this, and was told that no, there was no sort of intention of holding players back or anything. It was just, on a case by case basis. So anything that we might be imagining, I think, is just the way we look at it.
It's just
I mean,
me.
there was the interview with the club doctor on the official Albion podcast, and I know they're talking about managing their loads and not making sure they're pulling them out of training when they think they're in the red zone and things like that, which quite frankly, to a certain degree, is probably a load of rubbish. I mean, well, I know you, Vicky, you don't agree, but I mean, there is players will know if they're at the verge of exhaustion or if they're carrying a knock.
Yes, but players also they want to play, and even that there's if I remember reading some footballer's autobiography years ago, and he said something in it, and it just made me think. Yeah, something I really noticed ever since, and that's that when a team is playing well and on a really good run, they never seem to get so many injuries. And part of that is the psychology of it, because the team's playing well, the confidence is there, they all really want to be out there and playing, they're desperate not to get injured, because they don't want to lose their place, and so they might carry on running a little bit when the perhaps they've got a bit of a niggle or something. The opposite is also true, that when a team is playing badly and in a relegation zone and really, really struggling, it's a lot easier at that point to just sort of put your hand up and go, do you know what, I'm feeling that hamstring a little bit, boss, I just need a bit of a rest. So you see it all the time, and people will go on about their luck with injuries, and I think there's no doubt that if the numbers alone suggest the Albion have been pretty unfortunate this season, but I also think players are more likely to run themselves through that pain barrier and maybe not mention something when the team's doing well, and more likely to mention it when they're not.
I mean, I think it's a bit more difficult to do that these days anyway, because of the way they're actually monitored. I mean, I completely get where you're coming from, but what I was kind of alluding to was the fact that there's certain drills which certain players like to do, like the strikers like to do finishing practice.
Do
They like
they?
to, yeah. They well, the strikers
Really?
do, yeah, because they like the feeling of having the ball hit in the back of the net as many
Because
times as
it doesn't
possible.
show.
And it, well, that's it, because they're basically saying no, training's over, no more shooting, you're going in.
I don't necessarily think it's that. It's just that's the whole point of the sports science department, isn't it? That they will sit there and they'll have a very tailored program. I don't think any manager in his right mind, or any coach in his right mind, is going to say to their star striker, no shooting. You can't have any practice today, because it's more about the kind of the exercise side of, the running back and forth, and the short, sharp movement drills and that sort of thing. I think, I don't know. Obviously, I'm not party to what goes on, but I'd be very surprised if they stood there and said, anyone stood there and says, do you know what, you can't just go and whack a few balls. And that the players would be, just going along with it. I don't know.
But
It is.
I mean,
Hang
obviously,
on,
we've had
Andy.
long,
So I
yeah.
was just going to say that it is, when you sort of think of players of yesteryear and the whole thing of, for instance, David Beckham, when he was starting out, he'd go there, and after training, he'd do an extra hour of practicing free kicks. Or I think I can't remember who it was that we were talking about, sort of the whole use of left foot and right foot. Because, again, the word, my word of the week is bugbear, is the number of players that can't use that, both feet.
Adam Lallana said that they used to do training drills at Southampton where they were only allowed to use their supposedly wrong foot.
Got ya. I mean, and I think it was, I can't remember who it was that said, I think it was on this show, that Glenn Hoddle, I mean, one of the most sort of classy two-footed players that this country's ever seen. He actually stopped practicing playing football when he was about 9 or 10 with his good foot, just in order to learn how to use his left foot, because he thought, well, I know how to use it. So the point is that there are certain drills that the doctors and the sports scientists will have their players go through, with that extra risk, which the likes of Beckham probably got away with, that if they do that extra hour, you risk a tweak, you risk a hamstring pull, even if it's just with the sort of light training of a few free kicks. So I guess it's all probably carefully monitored. Not that they say you can't do that extra shooting practice, but they can't do it, way until sort of sunrise.
Well, no, I totally get that, but it was just something that came up, and I just wanted to bring it up. But I mean, we did see a different striker in this game, seeing as like Pedro was got twisted his ankle in training. Danny Welbeck wasn't fit enough to start, and that was Jorginho starting as the main striker. What did we make of that, Vicky?
Well, I think it's been documented on a previous Raw that I am a big fan of Georgie, just because he's a ray of sunshine. He just
He
seems,
is.
I've said that before, he's a really good guy to come around. But yeah, he brings something different. I thought he did last night, actually, on the Ipswich game. We'll come on to that later, I am sure. But he offers something different. I think he's quite strong. He's got a bit of sort of bulk about him, and he's able to sort of hold people off and beat a player. So I think that was nice to see him in there, and obviously for him to score as well. Like, that's something he's not particularly been renowned for. The Leeds fans adored him, but not necessarily for his goal scoring record. So the fact that he's now got
Yeah.
three in a couple of games is a real positive for us as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the
Nick.
physical presence. He's got all the attributes. He can head the ball. Sort of said something after the Norwich game, some sort of dark comment about, well, of course, you've got to be in the penalty area to get goals. And I was glad to see him getting in there. And the second one was quite a brave one, actually, because the guy was going to come across and clout him, whatever happened. And but he still got in there and got the
Weak for
shot away
that kind of thing,
before.
Nick.
Say that again, Vicky.
It's the week for goalkeepers getting clattered, isn't it, by the looks of it?
Yeah, somewhat.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we'll
There
talk
is
about
none.
that a little bit later on.
But
Okay,
can I
well.
also just say, AD, obviously it was said after the Ipswich game, but it still holds true for his general players. Is that the interview with Steve Sidwell on the side of the pitch, for the Ipswich game, and apparently we've got Bobby Zamora is actually helping out the forwards.
Yes, he is.
The other thing that threw me is Bobby Zamora turned 44 this week. So he's not the former 19-year-old Brighton striker. Well, he's 44 now. Anywho, and he was saying about how Rutter is, he's been brought in to do some, a job, and sort of admittedly sort of more than what he was doing at Leeds. But Sidwell was saying that Zamora was saying that he actually brings so much more, and it's not just the strength. There is that aerial stuff. There is that stuff on the floor as well. I mean, if you remember the second half against Spurs earlier in the season, he was on fire and set up Welbeck for the winner. I think he scored the second goal himself, didn't he?
Yeah.
There is something about him, and like I say, I've got to sort of align myself with your point here, Vicky. He just looks like a kid who's having fun, doesn't he?
Yeah,
Well,
and I think he strikes me as potentially more of a 10, I think, than a, certainly as a centre forward. But yeah, I mean, he's someone that looks like he's got a genuine appreciation for what he gets to do for a living. He seems to
yeah.
be someone that's good for the rest of the team to have around. He doesn't seem like someone that's going to bring others down when he's not maybe starting a game. I just think he's got a lot to offer. And I also think he's got a lot of room to improve, and I mean that in a good way, that there's a lot of capacity there that he can really, kick on. I think he's good now, but I think he could really kick on and be something quite special. So that'll be interesting to see.
But he's just a player that, like, he's one of these guys that plays with a smile on his face. It looks like he's having fun when he's out there. I mean, and out of all these, we've brought in a lot of players in the summer, a lot of which have gone straight into the team. Some of them got out injured straight away and not got back in and such a bit. But I haven't warmed to all of the new arrivals just
He's
yet.
the
I think
pick of
that
the signings by a
he is
distance, isn't he?
he's the only one I've really warmed to that's come in so this summer.
But even
Well,
last night, I thought he came on at Portman Road and straight away he was trying to attack. And one of the things that we were getting a bit frustrated with in the first half was just around how much possession we had, but not doing too much with it, and contrasting it with Liam Delap, who, whenever he got the ball, he was looking to get it forward or get himself forward. And I think it was nice to see Georgie come on and start taking people on. I'm not suggesting Ipswich have a particularly great defence. I don't think they do, and I think, that was apparent, but we'll get on to that, I'm sure. But yeah, it was just nice to see someone being positive with the ball.
Yeah, Nick.
Yes, no, I think he's absolutely right. I mean, I was lucky enough to do an interview with him for the club website. It was the end of quite a long session. It was a something the Albion laid on for the sponsors. We're getting to meet players, and so a couple of us got to speak to them as well. And I think he was the last one still standing. And I said, sorry, you have to talk to me after all. They said, oh, no, quite happy. Lucky to be playing football. It's part of the job. So usually the same sort of smiley persona that you see out there. And he's, as Ricky said, very, very pleased to be earning the living doing what he loves. And a very, very positive frame of mind. And you can see that in everything he does on the field. And of course that Spurs game, he bounced off Van de Ven and used his body to make space for himself before scoring the equaliser. Then battled his way past three players to get that cross in for Welbeck against Tottenham. So yeah, it's all there, and I think Hertzler was sort of hinting that he needs to get in there and do more of that.
Absolutely. And to think that, I mean, whilst a lot of Leeds fans do appreciate, they like it's the Calderon effect. They like to see a player who's a bit of a swashbuckler, smile on his face, connects with the crowd. And sometimes you might be able to forgive him one or two of his foibles if he indeed has any. But even then, and this is where I'm actually sort of, the cynical part of me is just sticking two fingers up at Leeds United because it's the thing to do. Is that there were quite a few of their Mardy fans saying, "Oh yeah, but he goes missing in the big games." Not in this universe, he doesn't.
Can I just also compliment Hertzler on those attacking substitutions that he made? He threw on more forward players and really took the game to Ipswich and forced them back. Attack is the best form of defence and all that. And Ipswich just couldn't get out. So there was, I didn't think there was any danger they were going to score at any point in the last 20 minutes.
We'll come on to the Ipswich game shortly, but there's a few other bits in the Norwich one that obviously slightly March. We'll come to that one in a second, but obviously two goals at the end of the first half for Georgie, one of which, well, both of which had a big helping hand from Yankuba Minter. Now, Minter is, I'm going back to the players who I'm yet to really warm to this season. He was one of them, but he's starting to show signs that he's maturing already, and he's been really getting better the last few couple of weeks.
He made an amazing start in the match against Everton. He had his left back on toast, and the cross across to Mitoma for the opening goal of the season, absolutely brilliant. And you think, okay, we've got something here. Then after that, what you've got is he is someone who does get back. He does acknowledge his defensive duties, but for too long, for me, he is one of those who can get to the edge of the area and then look completely and utterly lost as to what he's supposed to do with it next. As you point out, AD, I think, that's not going to last forever. It will get better. And we're seeing signs, bits and pieces of that getting better and being better.
Yeah, Vicky.
The ongoing frustration for me this season is that we've got on paper three decent wingers who, let's assume that Mitoma is always going to operate on the left. So it just feels like at the moment, whoever starts the game on the right-hand side has a fairly ineffective half or 75 minutes, whatever it is. And then whoever comes on as a substitute makes more of an impact. So then that player gets to play the next week, and you think, well, he had a great second half last week, so he'll be good. And then he does exactly the same thing of having a fairly average first half. So, Gruder's come on and at times impressed. When he started the game, he hasn't done so much. He gets subbed for, Minter comes on, does really well. Oh, great, he'll start the next game, doesn't do so well. Then Adingra comes in, and they've all kind of frustrated me a little bit this season in that none of them seem to start the game well when they've been picked from the off. And I don't know what it is, whether it's psychological or, they're all still relatively inexperienced, perhaps Adingra less so, but there's just a bit of frustration there for me that none of them particularly done it from the start. And in Adingra's case, I appreciate that he would prefer to be on the left wing, but in reality, with Mitoma there, that's probably not going to happen unless Mitoma goes off.
Vicky, is
Minter
that
did it in
for
that
you?
first
It's
half
sorry,
at
go on, go on,
Everton,
Nick.
didn't
Sorry,
he?
go on,
And
Nick.
he took the fullback on, beat him for pace, and crossed the ball, and we scored, and he never did it again.
That's the one, isn't it? That's it. And then the rest of them, it's kind of a bit, half and half.
Was my I don't know. My mind goes back to Dennis Romedahl at Charlton. They brought him because he'd
That
had
is
some great games.
obscure. Go
He had some great
on.
games for Denmark.
Danish guy, yeah.
I remember him,
Yeah,
yeah.
and he was
Yeah.
very fast. Played the ball, kept he, first half. I saw him. He knocked the ball past the winger, used his pace to get past him, crossed him, and he never did it again. And he kept saying, "Oh, I don't know what the manager expects from me." And what the manager expected was for him to belt the ball down the wing, run after it, beat the fullback, and cross the ball. But he complicated matters, and I think Minter could go back to basics a bit on the old belt it past the fullback, use your pace to get past him and cross it, and see where we go from there. That might work. Who knows? It's a crazy idea.
That takes me back to Alex Frutos. No, it doesn't.
I was actually going to say Seb Carroll.
Seb Carroll. Well, he was another we got who leads love. I've described him as like a little bit of a Paolo one shot, really, because he doesn't know what he's going to do next. So none of his teammates are going to know what to do next. So he's very, very difficult to read. But the last couple of weeks, he has actually been getting to the byline and getting it across. And, you know, we mentioned on the show a few weeks ago about the fact that we haven't been getting so many. We haven't had any. We've had one penalty now, but we weren't running into the box at pace anymore, which would invite the challenge, which would give, obviously, I know it's a pet hate of yours, Al, or a bugbear.
No, you don't win a penalty. You get
no, but I mean, if you're not, if you're running at the ball at pace, you're giving the defenders an option of how they're going to tackle you or take you out, basically.
Well, yes, but that doesn't mean to say you win it.
No.
I mean, you'd like to think if you're running in the box, it's because you've got an eye to go to the goal or pass it to your teammate to go to the goal, not because you're waiting to get clattered.
We're talking like the way Kaoru Mitoma used to do before he suddenly decided to stop in front of every fullback and pass it back to Estupiñán.
That kind of thing. That's a funny one, isn't it? Mitoma. I think that the fact that if he started with us this season, we're thinking, actually, what a decent start he's made. Actually, he plays well. He gets past his man, but we're comparing it to the Kaoru Mitoma over the last two seasons, and the Kaoru Mitoma, certainly the one that arrived from USG, was this lunatic on fire who could actually just drift past people for fun, gets injured, and like with every fast player, going back to Gary Hart and people before that. As soon as they get crocked and they're out for 3 months, you can see them lose a yard of pace.
I wouldn't say so much that. I mean, I think it's a case of people have learned how to play him a little bit more. And he's obviously he's got his thesis on how to get past players and dribbling and stuff. But it's a lot harder when you're taking on three of them as opposed to one of them.
Perhaps his PhD will actually talk about getting past three rather than one.
But I would also add that in his first season, him and Estupiñán had a really good partnership going on where they would sort of overlap each other. Mm-hmm. Purvis would get forward, you know, and sometimes be the furthest forward, and Mitoma had him as an option. And also that we were better at that stage at getting people in the box, probably because we had a much stronger midfield. And I think Estupiñán has not been the same player. I thought, you know, a few games ago, I thought there were signs that he was getting back to his best, but I'm still not quite convinced. I didn't think he was particularly great. He didn't do a lot wrong last night, but I thought, yeah, it wasn't. You know,
he the ball
he's
away
not
a lot.
The furthest of a couple of seasons or the sort of early De Zerbi era, is he? And I think that must make a difference to Mitoma, because he hasn't got those options yet. And if we're not getting players in the box, well, of course he's going to check back, because what's the point in him running to the byline if there's no one to pass it to?
I was about to say, there's one thing that I've noticed that he doesn't do as much as he used to, and you've just actually mentioned it there. And maybe he's been told not to, where De Zerbi allowed him to do it and Hertzler doesn't. I don't know. Mitoma's still doing his thing of going to the byline, but with the overlapping, you rarely see Estupiñán on the byline anymore. He's kind of been told to stay back to sort of like level with the penalty area. Well, it feels like he has, because like I say, he never goes. I haven't seen Estupiñán going past anyone on the byline in the past year.
No, he's done it a couple of times and got.
He was a long way up the field when Arsenal scored against us, that's for sure.
Yes, but and actually, he got called out again last night with Ipswich. So, and I think Hertzler made a point of saying, so I know that we're jumping to and from Norwich and Ipswich. Frankly, AD, they're all East Anglia. We might as well just meld them all together as one match.
Well, you know, gonna...
Brighton 6, East Anglia 0. Happy?
Yeah, we'll go with that. Okay, well, one player that, again, is not really been pulling up too many trees this season is Julio Enciso. And he had an interesting afternoon in Norwich, but he did score a goal which was all down to his hard work and his pressing, which I'm guessing what he's been told to do from the manager. And it was a great finish as well, Nick.
Oh, no, tremendous goal. I mean, if Solly hadn't come up with that, then I think that would have been the talking point. You know, and Enciso's first goal since his wonder strike against Manchester City.
Is it really that long?
Yeah, didn't score all last season. No, that's right. It was, as I said in my Times report, you know, the comeback kids, Enciso and March, and March got all the love. But, you know, if Enciso, if I think, would be the guy we were asking to speak to afterwards if it hadn't been for Solly. No, it was a brilliantly taken goal from an incredible angle. Nice sort of swerve on the shot, and deserved a bit of luck when he went in off the far post and made it all himself by taking the ball off the right back.
Well, that's what we want, though, isn't it? I mean, there was times when he first came on the scene. I remember there was a game, I think it was a game we won 6-0 against Wolves, where he was just absolutely unplayable at times, and he was just, I mean, he was actually playing in.
Must have had what, three assists. Must have been easily three assists, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was absolutely brilliant, and he was like, he just lit up the room that day. Mm. And we just see it in glimpses, and it's just really, really frustrating. And again, the rumor mill's going that he's. Well, he's saying he's not going to sign a new contract, and he's looking at getting
itself,
out.
But, the rumour mill can go screw itself. I have no time for that. I mean, I always harken back to the game I was sitting next to you with a couple of seasons ago up at Chelsea. And we were battering Chelsea. Do you remember, I think we were talking to, was it Jonathan Wilson? Now, this is appalling name dropping on our part. We do apologise, said no one ever. The author of the brilliant Inverting the Pyramid. And he was looking to write just this sort of wonderful piece about how the Albion have just completely and utterly smashed Chelsea into the ground, but were only drawing one all at the time. And he was wondering how he was going to do it. And then Enciso came up with that screamer.
Mm.
And then De Zerbi afterwards actually said, well, yeah, it was a great goal, but then he stopped playing for the last 20 minutes. And I think he wanted to throttle him, actually. That's the thing with Enciso is I won't say he's selfish, because I don't think there is a major issue with anyone being selfish, but he has tried so hard that you think, I mean, what was the game recently? He came back and he started and he was just shooting from every single angle. I think, you know, he was shooting from his own penalty area. It was like something out of FIFA. I have no problem with a player who's going to do that. But there are some times you think it's not just about you, Sunshine.
The problem is, of course, that having scored two wonder goals in one season, he, in the back of his mind, thinks he can do it every time he gets the ball.
And, well, I've got no problem being trying to.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably more that he feels that there's a little bit of pressure on him to do that as well. It's not that he can do it. He almost feels like he has to. I think he comes across as quite... insecure and desperate to succeed. He's absolutely desperate to succeed, isn't he? That's why he's launching these shots off from all over the place. I think it was Brentford, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, he's been out for a long time. That must have been a hugely frustrating thing for him, and not to have played much last season. So, you know, to come back is kind of, he's just desperate to prove, I'm still that guy. I can still do this. I can still do this. And the only way he can do it is by wanging those shots in from all over the shop. I don't necessarily think that it's a case of him being arrogant. I think it's more just desperation. And when he scored that goal at Norwich, you know, there's a couple of people in one of the WhatsApp groups I'm in, we're all saying, do you know what, that's great, because it might take that pressure off him a bit. It might calm him down and rationalise his thinking and get him back into that normal game mode, rather than I must score to show that everyone
else. Because, I mean, going back to that Brentford game, Vicky, was, I mean, he had so many...
Eight shots in the first
half.
Well,
no, I'm not going to say they, by normal standard, they weren't difficult chances, really. I mean, the header, for instance, he doesn't seem to take the simple chances. And that's something which...
What was the game where he smacked the post? Was that the Brentford game?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's also this consideration. It's actually on the back of what Vicky's saying. It just reminded me that when he arrived at the Albion... because there's not that many Paraguayans in the Premier League, that when he arrived, I recall this, was that the Paraguay equivalent of good morning Britain. So, you know, Buenos Dias Paraguay, or whatever it might have been called, I don't know. They pitched up a Bright Marina to do a live show on the back of Enciso arriving. It was news in Paraguay, and you just can't help feeling that not only is he taking on the burden on his own shoulders of those of his teammates at Brighton, but it's almost like, is he taking on the burden of Paraguay in order to be the player that he wants and feels he needs to
maybe
be?
Maybe we can hope that Gomez is going to sort of quiet him down.
I agree. We've said that since he came in. Okay. Like, is he going to be someone to just, you know, be that kind of arm around the shoulder? And I mean, they're very similar age, aren't they? So it's not like he's an older statesman, but you know, he's known in Paraguay as La Hoya, isn't he? The jewel. He is seen as the jewel of Paraguayan football. And I know that's, you know, when your competition is Almirón, it's probably not that big a deal, but for them it is. It's South America.
We had a bit of a barney with, didn't he, when we played Newcastle? That wasn't didn't show much Paraguayan solidarity.
No, well, but hang on, this new fella's played alongside Messi, so you know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just before we move on to Solly, I just wanted to have a quick word about the debutant at Norwich, which was Rory McConville. Didn't look out of place.
Well, when you're 3-0 up, you and controlling the game, then I guess probably what we're talking about here is Shannon Ruth, and I think it's an example of Shannon Ruth adhering to the club system. Now, whether it was under Potter, whether it was under De Zerbi, and now it's under Hertzler, there is that kind of pathway, that throughput. And McConville, we haven't had a huge amount of players over the past 12 months, not that many that have come from the under 21s into the first team. McConville's probably the first one in a little bit of time. The weird thing is that as we know, it's one of those sort of bizarre things that he played for his country before he played for his club. So you one assumes that he's got something about him. Did he have to do any sort of last minute Lewis Dunk outrageous blocks? Probably not, but yeah, probably when you're 3-0 up, and it's the FA Cup, and it's probably about the perfect time to come on and blood someone. And yeah, if he's not going to look out of place, then the possibilities are always there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Sorry, Nick, go on.
He didn't have an awful lot to do, and what he had to do, he did a couple of square balls to JP. Nearly got caught by the touchline once, but made a recovery, so pretty good. Just really what he needs is just to keep his morale up, that feel that the first team's noticed him. And I'm struggling to see where he's going to get future opportunities. Obviously, if we'd drawn Doncaster at home in the next round, he might have expected to get some more minutes then. But I'm Chelsea at home, I'm not so sure.
Actually, no. You say that. I mean, well, let's put it this way. One, we're recording this on Friday night, and this is just while the Albion women are playing, but just after the under-21s have played, and he wasn't in the under-21 squad, which says to me that, who knows, he's probably going to be on the bench, or possibly going to be on the bench when we go up to Manchester United this weekend.
Well, he's been on the bench for the last few weeks anyway. It's like, he's not new to bench warming, but it's just the case. It's the first time he's actually had some involvement. So I'm guessing he's been training with the first team for a while.
And given that Igor is now out for the rest of the season.
Absolutely, indeed.
You know, he is the next one off the cab rank, as they say. Unless the club goes fishing for a new player, and as we've heard so many times, the club doesn't like doing business in January, then yeah, promote from within. And if this fella can step up.
Unfortunately, Manchester City do, and they bought the player that we were looking at.
Go on.
Victor Reese. That hasn't gone through yet, though, has it?
I suspect it might.
Okay. Because, I mean, they're looking at, they're signing someone from Lons, I believe, but instead. But we will see.
Well, as AD.
Yeah, probably. Okay, just before we move on, I mean, the highlight of the game for absolutely everybody, and when we come to the end of the season review and we ask everyone for what their moment of the season was, I suspect it's going to be this.
It's going to be up there anyway.
And that was Solly March, scoring with his first touch. And it would have been ruled out if we had VAR. So there we go.
Yeah. Actually, he could have actually made a hero's name for himself against Brentford, actually.
Yeah. Similar chance, actually.
Well, Yeah. Yes, possibly it would. It might have been given offside. Probably would have given offside. But do you know what? That's the. It's the kind of the blood and thunder. It's the kind of cliche of the cup that VAR just gets under your feet, doesn't it? You know, it's not. It's there to sort us out the obvious ones. He might have been 6 inches offside, and given that he was actually 30 yards away from anyone else, that would have been a stinker to have overruled. But that said, he finished it off, AD with.
Aplomb.
I think there was an entire plum tree, actually.
It was fabulous. It was great.
And I love the fact that even Match of the Day picked up on the fact that it wasn't so much that Solly March scored, it's the camaraderie of his teammates. Nick, you've spoken to obviously a lot of the players. I assume that Solly March is as loved within the club as he is on the terraces.
Oh no, yeah, definitely. I mean, well, he's been at the club more than longer than most of the other players and the coaches. Herzl has said, you know, what a great character he is, and you know how he's worked so hard to get back, and obviously, as we know, it's the second time he's had to do all this. Yes, he's even down to his little cameo in Buzz's Boot Room Quiz as the Grinch in the last and the. And him being offered the Christmas present of a book about how to take penalties, which he casually threw aside. No, I mean,
Casually.
Solly's a very unassuming guy. I remember all the way back to doing interviews for the promotion book.
I'll be
And I
brightened
got,
up.
yeah, I said, I actually said to him, "Well, Solly, you know, you're a Premier League player now." And he basically said, "Oh, God, yeah, I hadn't thought of that." Given that he scored the goal that sent us up, in effect, it's a strange thing to think about. No, I think he just likes to get out there and play football and do what he does, and doesn't complicate life too much. And he's spoken twice after games, once after the Brentford game, and happy to speak after the Norwich game as well. And when players just want to get on the coach and get home. But no, thoroughly nice guy, deserves all the good things that come
Yeah.
his way.
And there was a nice moment between him and Shane Duffy afterwards as well, who also congratulated him on his comeback.
I get the feeling that Shane Duffy wanted to play for the Albion that day.
Probably. But he didn't get on till late, did
But
he?
it's actually in listening to what Nick's saying about Solly March there, just kind of reminds me of a latter day Gary Hart, someone who's got their feet on the ground, is humble, is enjoying the every moment of playing football. Hearty, we've had Hearty on the show two or three times, and each time it's along the lines of he. I don't think this is what Solly March feels, but certainly, I don't think it's too far for if I was to paraphrase Gary Hart and said he felt like he was stealing a living, in as much as he's just a bloke who runs around running into people and scores the old goal here and there. And of course, there was far more to Gary Hart than than that. But with Solly March, it's just sort of like, well, I enjoy playing football. I'm just, the Calderon thing. I'm a big kid. I love playing football. The fact it's for his home side, the fact it's in the Premier League is neither here nor there. The fact that probably, if he'd have carried on his trajectory that he was on, there's a possibility he could have played for England. But let's face it, Gareth Southgate really didn't go for Brighton players.
He also made the point that he was lucky to be able to play almost anywhere. I think he said he's played everywhere except centre back and central midfield,
And
and happy to
goalie.
do so. Which a lot of people get precious about their positions. They only want to play where they want to play. But left wing, left back, right wing, right back, centre forward, anywhere the team can use him, he's happy to play.
So let me ask this question of you, AD.
Yeah.
Who deserves the statue more at the moment, Solly March or Joel Veltman?
Oh, Joel Veltman. But we're going to come to that in a bit because you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Tell me about Flowers Unlimited, Alan, please.
Yeah, I hope they serve rosé in the way that I've been drinking it this evening. I'm sure they do, actually. In fact, I know they do. If you head to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, you will find the lovely boutique that is Flowers Unlimited, as run by Dave Costa, Albion fan of many a folklore year. They are also the Albion's official florist suppliers, flower suppliers. Where the Albion require flowers, I'm not 100% sure, but if they need their offices brightening up, then I guess that's probably entirely who they go to. But yeah, Dave Costa, very keen Albion fan, and has decided to sponsor the Albion Raw for this season at the very least. And if you wish to get any of your floral needs met, just do head to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. And if you mention you're an Albion season ticket holder, you automatically get a 20% discount. So head over there.
Okay. Well, now last week we brought to you the attention to the attention of Team Seesaw, who are currently making their way from the Canaries to Antigua in a bathtub, well, a rowing boat at the very least, and featuring Brighton fan Sam Webber. They're still on their way; they haven't quite made it there yet. And of course, you can go onto their website, just search Team Seesaw, and as in sea and soaring like a seagull. And you can go on there, and they're doing it in aid of Lyme Disease UK. You can go and sponsor them. We'll put all the links in the show description again. But they're doing a brilliant job, and yeah, it's a hard job. And Sam is still the most remote Albion fan on the planet. And good luck, guys.
Apart from me, when I was at the in the away end at Rushden and Diamonds, and I wasn't feeling well.
Well, yeah. Well,
But we'll have Sam on the Albion Roar to tell us about his rowing expedition at some point in the near future. But
yeah,
yeah, do head to Team Seesaw and do go and support them.
they're doing really well. I'd rather them than me, Nick, I think.
Oh, very much so, yes.
I mean, rowing across the Atlantic, stupid idea.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Nick, last week we had Paul Barber on the show, and actually, thanks to everyone who's come with your comments on that. It seems that what the club are saying and what other people are saying are slightly different. So, what are you hearing from your media chums in regards to the bill?
Sorry, what are we talking about now?
The Gut Football Governance Bill.
Well, the Premier League clubs don't like it, and everybody outside the Premier League does, obviously. The usual the line trotted out by Premier League clubs is there's no need for it, but of course it's they're not quite turkeys voting for Christmas, but I think they only see downsides for the Premier League clubs. I mean, particularly the sharing of money, which I can see. I mean, you don't get Tesco subsidising corner shops, and you don't get Premier League clubs willingly subsidising people who want to replace them. So I can kind of see that. I mean, some clubs have been more outspoken. I think Crystal Palace, for one, have been pushing that line. And I do sympathise to some extent.
It's interesting, the Times editorial that I got sent by Paul Barber after we did the show was they called the bill or referred to the bill in its current form as a problem looking for a solution. Now, I think we all agree that a regulator or some regulation of some kind is required. It's just the case of I can't help feeling that there's certain aspects of the football supporters who are, because they're talking to the government and they've got a direct hotline to the government, are a little bit blinded by, oh, we've got a seat at the top table, without actually realizing that the bill itself, as has been pointed out many times, is not going to stop another Bill Archer coming in, is not going to stop the whole thing of concessionary prices being done away with. It's not going to do the whole thing of the Chelsea FA Cup game, 8 o'clock on a Saturday evening. The regulator won't have a say on that. So is it the right bill? I mean, this is until such time as we got past the, what was it, 375 amendments that have been proposed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and government has got to go through that, which is going to take a bit of time. And I think there's a touch of filibustering about it, but I think there's a touch of genuine concern about it as well. At the moment, I think Paul Barber is being seen as a bit of a bad guy because he is one of those people within football who is going to give an honest opinion. Now, he has concerns for the future of Brighton and Hove Albion on the back of this bill. His opinions have now been, those opinions he's now offered have been deemed offensive by the Minister of Sport, Stephanie Peacock. Who's right, who's wrong, will all come out in the wash at some point. But at the moment, it's probably not necessarily that wise to get bogged down in it because the amount of amendments that have been put forward are going to bog it down for a long time. And so
one of my main misgivings is, well, you know, look at the other government regulators. What wonderful successes they've all been.
Said no one ever.
And also, I do remember when there was when FIFA tried to suspend Poland from all football activities because of excessive government interference. You know, that was to do with internal Polish politics. But who's to say if the government gets its claws into football, you know, where that could go?
Yeah, it's not as black and white as I think is being made out. It is a very muddy, murky, grey, add your own cliche to this area. It's not a fans v clubs. It's not Premier League versus the rest of football. The National League, for instance, because they rely on the money that the Premier League gets, they're not happy with this bill. Then there's those who are supporting this bill and the behaviour of those involved within it. It's not a straight black v white. It's not a straight 1v2. It's a mess.
I mean, the problem is a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of like misinformation in regards to
that
it.
That doesn't help as well.
Because if you ask what an average football fan on the street, what they think is in this bill, and they think, oh yeah, it's going to stop stuff like the Super League. It's going to sort out the trains. It's going to sort out the kickoff times. It's going to sort out like wrong uns coming into the game. No,
evidently
none of
not.
This is actually in it.
Exactly. I like to say, because once upon a time, Liz Costa, I'm going to say this, Liz Costa, who was the Albion fans representative at the Premier League FSA meetings, she can no longer attend. Now, the Albion itself doesn't have, it didn't until recently have anyone in place. So Liz suggested that I pop along. And I said that not because of any ego thing or because, you know, I felt I had something necessary to contribute. I just felt that the Albion needed to be represented at that particular top table. So I didn't necessarily contribute things to it, but what I did was hear things. And there were things that still concerned me. Mm. You know, there are 20 clubs in the Premier League and every individual set of fans have their own agenda. And they don't all square up with each other. Plus, you've then got those 20 clubs that actually treat their fans in a different way to everyone else. And Nick, you can adhere to this. The Albion are very, very communicative when it comes to speaking to people outside the club, are they not?
Oh, very much so, yeah. Arguably the most communicative. Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, you know, every time you've got every MP in the country trying to impress his own constituent or her own constituents by making a point, you know, there's going to be so many fingers in the pie and I don't know, we need to go back and rethink the whole thing, I think.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, let's move it on to there because, I mean, Vicky, what I want to know from you is, would you like a statue of Joel Routman or Solly March?
Outside my house or...
Where would you put it and what would it be and would it involve an outhouse?
You have to be someone quite special to deserve a statue, undoubtedly. Look, Veltman is becoming an absolute hero now, isn't he? And I think, last night just reinforced that. And what I quite like, and I've just been having a look through, is that ever since the early season game, everything we do now, we've got Arsenal fans combing through social media and glued to our games to find examples of further injustice, which illustrates how wrong they have been. And it's exactly the same last night. And I've just seen a whole collection of tweets about what an evil man Joel Veltman is and how he's going to kill somebody soon with his reckless football. And it's delightful because I love it when other teams have players like that, you kind of wish they were yours. And he's just grown into that role so much in recent years, hasn't it? I think it kind of started out with Zaha when he played for Palace, and he clearly got inside his head and wound him up and, made him lose his rag a few times to the point where he was less effective. So that was great. He's kind of replaced Maupay in that respect, hasn't he?
To be
And
fair,
last night was no
in
different.
my opinion, Maupay is probably, but for the fact he doesn't play in the Premier League, he was until recently the Premier League's biggest outhouser, was he not?
I'd
But he
still say
still
Emi
is.
Martinez there,
He
but
is. Who, sorry?
I still say Emi Martinez in that respect because, I mean, Maupay. The thing with Maupay is that he's very much an off the pitch Schweinshauser as well, isn't he? Because his recent Twitter or social media posts have just emphasised that it takes some balls, doesn't it, to still be a player, albeit he's in France now, but to still be playing football and to absolutely rinse your previous employers, Everton, like he was
They're
doing.
not his previous employers. They're still his employers. I was the
I
only on
didn't.
loan to Marseille.
He's only on loan. He's still an
I
Everton
didn't realise he
player.
was only on loan. So there we go. That does sort of smack of a dangerous game to play. Even if he'd signed permanently for Marseille, he'd have to consider the fact that there is always a chance he could return to English football. But he clearly doesn't care, and that's hilarious. But whereas Veltman isn't one for social media posts, I think his wife posts more on social media than he does, unless he's got seagulls to rescue from chimneys. But he's just great, and I think. Last night was just another example of him getting inside people's heads. I think he did eventually get booked, didn't he? But he
He
had
did
two or
get booked,
three
yeah.
fouls before that where you
Well, to be
think.
fair, it's not as though he sort of like screamed and grizzled that he shouldn't, but he just sort of raised his hand and said, "Yeah, I'll take that one."
Yeah,
What I thought
next.
was amazing is that he has this the signature move of stepping in front of a player and then getting pushed over to win a free
Yes.
kick. But he's added that very strange crouching behaviour at corners. Is he trying to make himself the new Hans Kraaij,
Talk to us,
from all the
Vicky. You were
papers out there?
there.
Well, I have to say Hans Kraaij is a little bit before my Albion recollection, so but I believe he's renowned for jumping up and down. Is that right? Something
That's
like
it,
that.
going in
No,
front of
but
the goal.
Literally
Veltman's
stand
doing the
off.
opposite. He's crouching down and
Yeah. Well, I
just.
couldn't see it as I suppose the thing with Portman Road is it's not the best in terms of views. And for every single corner we had, they all seem to take a long time to take, and not in the Arsenal sense of just kind of standing there and doing your bootlaces up and checking your hair and adjusting your shin pads and just waiting for half time. It was more just because every time that the ball was put down for a corner, the referee just kept going back across, stop doing this, stop doing that. So
Why
that
do
was
they
quite
do
funny.
that? Why do referees do that? They're not coaches.
No.
Just see what happens and give a free kick or a
And
penalty.
tell them if you keep pulling, then I'm gonna give this or give that. But I suppose there's so much of it going on. Maybe it's a case of just trying to stop a little bit of it so you can at least
Yeah.
focus on one or two rather than 10 players
Well,
all.
I did notice in the game against Ipswich that our corners had significantly improved from where they had been over the last most of the season.
Can I
And
also point out, do you know why that is? And I saw that with the corner and I saw it with a free kick. They basically copied what Arsenal did. Now, in as much as when we played Arsenal, we kept three players up in order that the Arsenal overload within the box didn't work. Now, we did that against Ipswich, or in as much, sorry, Ipswich didn't leave three players up so that three Brighton players couldn't go into there. But there was also a free kick near the end. Actually, no, I'll tell you was it was the free kick for the second goal where all the Brighton players are at one end of the thing and then they trot across slightly offside and then go back as soon as the free kick comes in. They did a complete carbon copy of what Arsenal did with their set pieces.
Yeah, I think we were sort of. I mean, you say our corners were much better. There was a couple that one that sort of did the usual thing of bouncing off the first defender, another one that sailed over everyone and went out. But yeah, they were in the right place. Perhaps helped by the fact that I don't think Christian Walton is particularly strong on dominating his box. And I don't think Ipswich's defence was much up to much either. That said, you've still got to get it in there, and we've wasted enough in the past, haven't we? So, well, there was definitely moments where we were causing them more problems, and it seems like it just feels like the same routine every time. But then you could say the same for most clubs, where they put the ball down, they sort of stroke the hair, they put one hand up, which seems to be the signal for every type of corner under the sun. I'll just put my
Yes.
hand up, and everyone knows where this is going, and we're all like, yeah, first defender mostly.
I get the feeling that actually a lot of players in the middle of the penalty area can't see the corner being ready to be taken. So that's why they stick their hands up and they say, corner coming in imminently.
Yeah, but I did think there was more pushing than usual last night, and I think that.
However, let's face it, we're talking about Veltman's outhousery. We're talking about it against Arsenal. We're talking about against Ipswich, and there has been several other instances. Does that make him, a contender for the Paris season? Not necessarily. But while we're talking Dutch things, now my player of the season, I still think is going to be Van Hekker, unless until such time as he completely actually screws up his thing. But getting back to what you were saying, Nick, a crazy Dutchman at corners, Hans Kraaij. Vicky said herself that she can't remember what he did. What did he do?
Well, he arrived with a great reputation for violence. Hadn't he been suspended
For
throughout
punching a
the whole
referee,
game
yeah.
by the Dutch? And his slide tackles were his métier. He managed to annoy Chris Catlin by throwing his shirt off when he would had been substituted. But the main thing that everyone remembers is jumping up and down in front of the goalkeeper from
Zebedee.
corners. And well, at least one referee tried to tell him not to do it. And you think, well, I don't know what it is in the laws of the game that prevents you from jumping up and down if you're not making contact with anyone. But the Veltman move seemed really weird. There's the crouching down. I wonder if he's trying to sort of make the goalkeeper fall over him as he came out to punch. But
Did he have a
yeah, crazy
dodgy kebab
Dutchman.
an hour before the game?
Yeah, crazy
I
Dutchman from
must
corner.
admit, I missed all of that going on because there was so much else going on in the box there. But that it says a lot for Veltman that the first half wasn't great against Ipswich. We started out dominated possession. Yeah, 20 minutes they couldn't get the ball off us. We just didn't do anything with it, really.
It was
And
very
the
much half.
highlight at half time for most of us was that tackle by Veltman on Delap, where he just
Oh,
came
he.
flying in across and
Oh.
just absolutely cleaned him out. Clean tackle, but it's the sort of one
Absolutely.
that as a fan you love to see and you cheer wildly, but at the same time you're going, I'm cheering this because the game's quite crap. And that was it.
Yes.
If you had a highlights reel of that first half, that would probably, from our point of view, Ipswich, you just got.
The first half was just a largely forgettable affair. It was like it was very much we're huff and puff and we might give you a tickle. We did absolutely nothing to get ourselves ahead in that game in the first half, and it was just woeful. But second half, everything was better. The tempo was better. The personnel were better. It was just good. But
TV were going mad for Liam Delap's form and what have you, and I'm thinking, well, he had a couple of goes here and there, but between them, Van Hekker and Veltman put this lunatic on his ass to the point that, and face it, the yellow card that he did get could have easily been a red because. And I'm sorry to say that's all we've got time for this week. So if you want to carry on listening to the conversation, head over to our podcast on Audioboom or any podcast platform that you tend to listen to the show on. Meanwhile, thanks to Vicky Rees, thanks to Nick Chapanik, thanks to the host, Adi Packer. My name's Alan Wares, and thanks for listening to the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and just about everywhere else. See you again next week.